For more information on Farmer at Farmer Hill, please contact LibriVox.org. Recorded by Peter Yeoman. Ghost Stories of an Antiquary, Volume 1, by M.R. James. Author's Preface. If anyone is curious about my local settings, let it be recorded that St. Bertrand de Comminges and Vifourg are real places, that in O Whistle and I'll Come to You, I had Felixstowe in mind. As for the fragments of ostensible erudition which are scattered about my pages, hardly anything in them is not pure invention. There never was, naturally, any such book as that which I quote in The Treasure of Abbot Thomas. Canon Albert's scrapbook was written in 1894 and printed soon after in the National Review. Lost Hearts appeared in the Pall Mall magazine. Of the next five stories, most of which were read to friends at Christmas time at King's College, Cambridge, I only recollect that I wrote number 13 in 1899, while The Treasure of Abbot Thomas was composed in the summer of 1904. Canon Albrecht's scrapbook. Saint-Bertrand de Comminges is a decayed town on the spurs of the Pyrenees, not very far from Toulouse, and still nearer to Bagnères-de-Luchon. It was the site of a bishopric until the Revolution. It has a cathedral which is visited by a certain number of tourists. In the spring of 1883, an Englishman arrived at this old world place. I can hardly be dignified with the name of city, for there are not a thousand inhabitants. He was a Cambridge man who had come specially from Toulouse to see Saint-Bertrand's church, and had left two friends who were less keen archaeologists than himself in their hotel at Toulouse, under promise to join them on the following morning. Half an hour at the church would satisfy them, and all three could then pursue their journey in the direction of Oak. But our Englishman had come early on the day in question, and proposed to himself to But he was precisely like dozens of other church guardians of parts. But in a curious, furtive, or rather hunted and oppressed air which he had, he was perpetually half glancing behind him. The muscles of his back and shoulders seemed to be hunched in a continual nervous contraction, as if he were expecting every moment to find himself in the clutch of an enemy. The Englishman hardly knew whether to put him down as a man haunted by a fixed delusion, or as one oppressed by a guilty conscience, or as an unbearably henpecked husband. The probabilities, when reckoned up, certainly pointed to the last idea, but still, the impression conveyed was that of a more formidable persecutor even than a termagant wife. However, the Englishman, let us call him Deviston, was soon too deep in his notebook and too busy with his camera to give more than an occasional glance to the sacristan. Whenever he did look at him, he found him at no great distance, either huddling himself back against the wall or crouching in one of the gorgeous stalls. Deviston became rather fidgety after a time. Mingled suspicions that he was keeping the old man from his dejeuner, that he was regarded as likely to make away with Saint Bertrand's ivory crozier, or with the dusty stuffed crocodile that hangs over the font, began to torment him. "Won't you go home?" he said at last. "I'm quite well able to finish my notes alone. You can lock me in if you like. I shall want at least 2 hours more here, and it must be cold for you, isn't it?" "Good heavens," said the little man, whom the suggestion seemed to throw into a state of unaccountable terror. "Such a thing cannot be thought of for a moment. Leave Monsieur alone in the church. No, no. 2 hours, 3 hours, all will be the same to me. I have breakfasted. I am not at all cold. Good many thanks to Monsieur." "Very well, my little man," quoth Deviston to himself. "You've been warned, and you must take the consequences." Before the expiration of the 2 hours, the stalls, the enormous dilapidated organ, the choir screen of Bishop Jean de Moulia, the remnants of glass and tapestry, and the objects in the treasure chamber had been well and truly examined. The sacristan still keeping at Deviston's heels, and every now and then whipping round as if he had been stung, when one or other of the strange noises that trouble a large empty building fell on his ear. Curious noises they were sometimes. "Once," Deviston said to me, "I could have sworn I heard a thin metallic voice laughing high up in the tower. I cast an inquiring glance at Lord Sacristan. He was white to the lips. It is he. It is no one. The door is locked," was all he said, and we looked. composition of the picture is well-known and decipherable, but there is a Latin legend below referring thus. Colitur es Bertrandus liberavit hominem quam diabolos diu volebat strangulare. How Saint Bertrand delivered a man whom the devil long sought to strangle. Denniston was turning to the sacristan with a smile and a jocular remark sent to upon his lips, but he was confounded to see the old man on his knees, gazing at the picture with the eye of a suppliant in agony, his hands tightly clasped, and a rain of tears on his cheeks. Denniston naturally pretended to have noticed nothing, but the question would not go away from him. Why should a daub of this kind affect anyone so strongly? He seemed to himself to be getting some sort of clue to the reason of the strange look that had been puzzling him all day. The man must be a monomaniac. But what was his monomania? It was nearly 5 o'clock. The short day was drawing in, and the church began to fill with shadows, while the curious noises, the muffled footfalls and distant talking voices that had been perceptible all day, seemed, no doubt because of the fading light and the consequent weakened sense of hearing, to become more frequent and insistent. The sacristan began for the first time to show signs of hurry and impatience. He heaved a sigh of relief when camera and notebook were finally packed up and stowed away, and hurriedly beckoned Denniston to the western door of the church and he would turn. It was dark within the aqueous, a few pulls at the reluctant rope, and the great bell Bertrand, high in the tower, began to speak and swung her voice up among the pines and down to the valley's loud and mounting streams, calling the dwellers on those lonely hills to remember and repeat the salutation of the angel for her whom he called blessed among women. With that, a profound quiet seemed to fall for the first time that day upon the little town, and Denniston and the sacristan went out of the church. On the doorstep, they fell into conversation. The seer seemed to interest himself in the old prayer books in the sacristy. Undoubtedly, I was going to ask you if there were a library in the town. No, monsieur. Perhaps there used to be one belonging to the chapter, but it is now such a small place. Here came a strange pause of irresolution, as it seemed. Then with a sort of plunge he went on, but if monsieur is amateur de vieille, I have at home something that might interest him. Is not 100 yards. At once, all Denniston's cherished dreams of finding priceless manuscripts in untrodden corners of France Where would the likelihood of the place so near to lose would not have been ransacked long ago by collectors? However, it would be foolish not to go. He would reproach himself forever after if he refused. So they set off. On the way, the curious irresolution Let me amne responsum est in venies. Viamne vives ies. Vivamne invidentes vives. Moriamne in lacto mer ita. Answers offered both of December 1694. It was asked, shall I find it? Answer, thou shalt. Shall I become rich? Thou wilt. Shall I live an object of envy? Thou wilt. Shall I die in my bed? Thou wilt. A good specimen of the treasure hunter's record quite reminds one of Mr. Minor Canon Quatremain in Old St. Paul's, the Tennyson's comment, and returns the leaf. yellow, had intensely black pupils, and were fixed upon the throne king with a look of beast-like hate. Imagine one of the awful bird-catching spiders of South America translated into human form, and endowed with intelligence just less than human, and you will have some faint conception of the terror inspired by the appalling effigy. On the mark is universally made by those to whom I have shown the picture. It was drawn from life. As soon as the first shock of his irresistible fright had subsided, Demister stole a look at his hosts. The sacristan's hands were pressed upon his eyes. His daughter, looking up at the cross on the wall, was telling her beads feverishly. At last, the question was asked, "Is this book for sale?" There was the same hesitation, the same plunge of determination that he had noticed before, and then came the welcome answer. "If Monsieur pleases." "How much do you ask for it?" I will take 250 francs." This was confounding. Even a collector's conscience is sometimes stirred, and Demister's conscience was tenderer than a collector's. "My good man," he said again and again, "your book is worth far more than 250 francs. I assure you, far more." But the answer did not vary. "I will take 250 francs, not more." There was really no possibility of refusing such a chance. The money was paid, the receipt signed, a glass of wine drunk over the transaction, and then the sacristan seemed to become a new man. He stood upright. He ceased to throw those suspicious glances behind him. He actually laughed, or tried to laugh. Demister rose to go. "I shall have the honor of accompanying Monsieur to his hotel," said the sacristan. "I know that. It is 100 yards. I know the way perfectly, and there is a room." The alcohol was pressed 3 or 4 times, and refused as often. "Then Monsieur will summon me if he finds occasion. He will keep the middle of the road, the sides are so rough." "Certainly, certainly," said Demister. He was impatient to examine his prize by himself, and he stepped out into the passage with his book under his arm. Here he was met by the daughter. She, it appeared, was anxious to do a little business on her own account, perhaps, like Gehazi, to take somewhat from the foreigner whom her father had spared. "A silver crucifix and chain for the neck? Monsieur would perhaps be good enough to accept it?" "Well, really, Demister had much use for these things. What did Mademoiselle want for it?" "Nothing, nothing in the world. Monsieur is more than welcome to it." The tone in which this, and much more, was said was unmistakably genuine, so that Demister was reduced to profuse thanks, and submitted to have the chain put around his neck. It really seemed as if he had stood up in his chair with deadly, inconceivable terror clutching at his heart. The shape, whose left hand rested on the table, was rising to a standing posture behind his seat, its right hand crooked above his scalp. There was black and tattered drapery about it. The coarse hair covered it as in a drawing. The lower jaw was thin, but I call it shallow, like a beast's. Teeth showed behind the black lips. There was no nose. The eyes were fiery yellow, against which the pupils showed black and intense, and the exalted hate and thirst to destroy life, which shone there, were the most horrifying features in the whole vision. There was intelligence of a kind in them, intelligence beyond that of a beast, below that of a man. The feelings which this horror stirred in Denniston were the intensest physical fear and the most profound mental loathing. What did he do? What could he do? He has never been quite certain what words he said, but he knows that he spoke, that he grasped blindly at the silver crucifix, that he was conscious of a movement towards him on the part of the demon, and that he screamed with the voice of an animal in hideous pain. Pierre and Bertrand were two sturdy little serving men who rushed in, saw nothing, but felt themselves thrust aside by something which passed out between them. Denniston in a swoon. They sat up with him that night. His two friends were at Saint-Bertrand by 9 o'clock next morning. He himself, though still shaken and nervous, was almost himself by that time, and his story found credence with them, though not until they had seen the drawing and talked with the sacristan. Almost at dawn, the little man had come to the inn on some pretense and had listened with the deepest interest to a story retailed by the landlady. She showed no surprise. It is he. I've seen him myself. Was his only comment, and to all questions, but one reply was answered. Je vois, je l'ai vu, mille fois, je l'ai senti. He would tell them nothing of the provenance of the book, nor any details of his experiences. I shall soon sleep, and my rest will be sweet. Why should you trouble me? He said. Good night. He died that summer. His daughter married and settled at Saint-Capoux. She never understood the circumstances of her father. He had been last year from Ash to see Kamal for its tomb. It is a great marble erection with an effigy of the cavern in a large wig of soutane, and an elaborate eulogy of his learning alone. I saw Denison talking for some time with the vicar of Southampton's, and as we drove away, he said to me, "Take it in the front. Do you know I